Welcome to the Wolf of Queen Street podcast with Lawrence Lotz. Join Lawrence as he gets together with his friends from all over the world to discuss the latest trends, give some business insights, and add a little South African chaos into your lives. Don't forget to subscribe on Instagram at the Wolf of Queen Street and find us on all of your listening platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor, Google Podcasts, and much more. Hope you enjoy the show.
Wolf of Queen Street, welcome back to the audio or video podcast series if you're joining us today. But before we get going, today's episode is brought to you by the Dark Heart Grooming Company, skincare for men using only honest, organic, native ingredients from New Zealand. And you can find them on Instagram under the Dark Heart Grooming Co. And the next time you place your order, just add WOLF10 at checkout for a 10% discount. I must actually take a look and... The person that joined me today is Neil Conlon. And Neil, I might actually get you some of these products because they're the most amazing men's face and beard products. And if anyone's watching the video at the moment, Neil is a gentleman that has the most impressive beard on Instagram, on Facebook. He's known as the beard that defeats malware. He's the VP of AppGuard at the moment. But the reason I got Neil on the show, and it's quite a strange story. I noticed Neil on Instagram because of the beard. And I love what he's doing and the posts he was doing. And if anyone that knows Neil and seen his Instagram stories, it's always usually quite unique. It's Neil in a dark room and it's some lights on him with his face and his beard, or you've got your own beard that's got a photo of you. And I've been following him for months and months. And then finally I reached out to a friend. I said, hey, what do you think would be amazing to have on the show? And he turned around and said, you should get Neil Conlon on the show. You should look into him, get him on the show. He's actually got amazing things to say. And I wasn't quite aware of your background, your full background, and my apologies there for Neil. But it was amazing to see your starting point where you were, I think it was 8 years service in the Marines, to where you are today at VP at AppGuard, and the transition that you went through from that stage to where you are today. But we'll get through that on the show, and we'll discuss that more in detail after that. But welcome onto the show, Neil.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for that amazing introduction. I'm excited to be here. And, I think it's just real quick. It's interesting, I think, that, you know, when social media, you know, first started, we were all trying to figure out what that really meant, like whether it's Twitter or Instagram. And now we've moved into this really interesting kind of digital Darwinism, is what I've heard it called, yep. Where it's like you can actually reach out, you know, have an impact on somebody, but then they reach back. Mm-hmm. And then you start to align and build a relationship with them. And I would say that some of my closest, most important people in my life nowadays all started from organic conversations that started on social media.
Yeah.
So I'm super grateful and appreciate the time here today, and looking forward to doing this podcast with you.
Thanks, Neil. I totally agree with your sentiment, what you just said at the moment. A lot of the relationships I've actually built just in the podcast series over, it's only been 9-10 months going at the moment, have become actual real relationships in the sense of honest talking to people because of reaching out and using social media. And the platform has also allowed me, and to anyone that's listening, again, take this as an insight. It's allowed me and gave me evidence as well as direction to reach out and confidence to reach out to certain people I wouldn't have reached out before and said, hey, how are you doing? This is me. I'd like to talk to you about the podcast series. I'd love your brand. I'd love to have a discussion. And at the end of the day, because it's honest and raw about it, it's not about, hey, Neil, can you come on the show and, you know, pitch my business or pitch my brand to your listeners or your fans. People give you the time of day. And if you've got a good platform and if you've got a good message, you want them to allow to do it. By all means, they're going to say, yes, let's build a relationship and go from there. And everything that I've built, that I've seen I've built, has held, which is really great. And it's exactly what you say in the social media Darwinism of where we are today, of how things are transitioning, how the relationships you're building. Because unfortunately, our world is driven by computers, cell phones, social media. You know, at the moment, the X amount of hours you spend on it. I was talking to someone the other day and they're doing a dark November. I'm sure you've seen it on your social media, right? Reduce half their time of November or check on the 1st of November how much time they spend on social media or on their phone, and by the end of the month, reduce half the time and then use that time for other benefits. And I was speaking to him, I'm going, you know, how much what are you trying to achieve? And he goes, well, I've been testing. I'm using my phone 12 hours a day. I'm on my phone.
Right.
And I said, geez, firstly, I was like, okay, that is actually a decent sized number. But then you think it through going, well, what is underlining that? Because is it 12 hours a day and I enjoy watching my Netflix across my device at night instead of watching on my laptop? Or, you know, I do that personally. I watch sports or Netflix at night. So there's 3 or 4 hours that you might have picked up. Also, I network quite a lot on my phone. So it's quite an interesting thing to see of people going, go away from it. But also you need it in the current workplace to network, to build relationships, to build business, sales and marketing in the space that you are in as well, to ensure that you've got that correlation between self and customers or yourself and future customers. And it's a hard place to go, do I go more, do I go less, or do I hold?
Right, right. Yeah, I think we're in a very interesting time because, you know, if you think about it, mobile devices and computers have still only been around for, you know, about 20-ish, 25 mm-hmm. years, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the when I teach and educate people on, you know, kind of digital awareness, which is a place that I add a lot of value, if you think about it, since the time where humans figured out how to plant and farm their own vegetables, mm-hmm. right? Evolution for us significantly slowed down mm-hmm. because we didn't have to move, right? Before that, we were very tribal. We were eating, we were moving with the seasons. We went where the resources were. Once we figured out how to plant potatoes and grains and bake bread, we kind of stopped evolving. We slowed down a lot. And then you have these hundreds or thousands of years where we're pretty much the same person, same body type, you know, we haven't added a new tooth or a new bone. And then we developed this thing called internet technology, and now we're advancing super, super fast, yep. consciously, right? So I think the bigger, big piece of it, whether you look at the dark mode piece of it, you know, whether you look at the amount of dopamine or serotonin, you know, that is released into our minds during our viewing periods, the impacts of having children, you know, what age is the appropriate time for your children's brain to be formed in order for them to have exposure to multiple hours yep. of screen time, you know, then you have online bullying, you know, and the impacts of how that interaction really takes place. And then you have like what it's like to really build communities and really have impact people in a positive way where, not to digress too far, but mm-hmm. I just went through a period of time where, you know, I belong to some very interesting, conscious and aware communities of people, mm-hmm. right? These are people focused on growth mindsets. These are people who are living in a positive world. These are people living in abundance. And I went through a period now where I've started to remove and replace anybody who is in my inner social circles, even from a follower standpoint online, to say, you know, the only messaging I want to see, the only feedback I want to see is positive, empowering, mm-hmm. building up, abundant stuff, because we've proven over and over again that the amount of information that you get is going to change how you perceive what's going on in the world around you.
Correct.
Right? And we're in this interesting place now where I was part of a group a few months ago that, you know, here in the US where we've got, you know, very split political mm-hmm. affiliations and culturally right now, where you could ask 10 people who grew up in the same town to take a multiple choice test, and they all come up with completely different answers because they've gotten completely different information from their viewing habits from their mobile phones, whether it was a Republican, a liberal, an independent. Whatever viewing mechanism they're using, they have different understandings of what's really going on. And so I think that's going to continue until we really figure out this thing that we use 12 hours, 14 hours of a day, how it actually interacts with the human conscious and the human body. All right. I feel like I'm digressing a bunch.
No, I love it, Neil. I love that space, and it's an interesting space, especially just let our listeners know, Neil's actually sitting in New York at the moment. He's sitting outside enjoying the New York weather. I'm, as always, in Auckland, New Zealand. Just, again, to touch on points I've done in other podcast series we spoke about in the very beginning, don't be afraid to reach out. Also, don't give me the excuse that I'm on the wrong side of the world or the other time zone, that you can't reach out to people and get people on a show or a podcast or talk to them. 6 a.m. in the morning here by me. I think it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon by Neil. We are 17 hours in a different time zone, but we could make it work. But as you said, Neil, that is an interesting situation at the moment of what the content is that we see. What is the messaging we see in our life? You've been a Tony Robbins family member, as we'd call it, as is myself. You would know that your life is controlled by the 5 closest people, or the 5 people around you that will direct your content, your messaging, your lifestyles, and that's what you replicate yourself on as well. But before we go further down that path, I just want to give our listeners some insight into you yourself and your history so they could see there's some really great points in what your past 20 years went through about stepping up, keeping the focus, getting through the darkness, and keep knocking on those doors to get to the areas of success that you want to achieve. Because as much as you're VP of AppGuard now, which is cybersecurity, zero-day attacks, analytics, and so forth, the sort of geeky stuff in cybersecurity world, a lot of people that's listening here would say, okay, that sounds cool. It's a bit geeky. Sounds cool. But a lot of them want to understand the story, what got you to that place, and what you had to overcome to show that it's not just, hey, I got there easy and I made it easy. And I want to take it all the way back to New York native, 8 years in the Marines you served. You joined in the Marines, I think it was just under around 8 years. And I remember you saying previously that you went into that space going, I believe this is my passion and I want this to be my passion. And as with most situations, you get through it and came out and went, I don't think this is my passion anymore. I need to find what's next for me. Is that correct? Right. Yep. And then there was something, a real interesting part, and I love this part of your history, is that you can tell our listeners a little bit more into it. I don't really want to tell them your whole life through my words, but you find yourself, I believe it was a building security job, or it was maintenance of a building,
yep,
and so forth, was your first real job out of the Marines. And then you wanted to find a new career, but you weren't too sure what it was. So you wrote out as you've mentioned, a really bad resume. And you started going to the businesses within the building and just said, hey, this is me. Would you like a look at my resume? I think you even said that, I don't know what your companies do, but I want to work for you. So pretty much like the worst person knocking on the door going, I have no idea what you're selling, what your business is about, but please hire me. And I would love for you to continue the story to how you got the person that said yes.
Yeah, no, definitely appreciate that. And really appreciate you doing the research and the background there. So that means a lot to me, and I'm grateful for you for it.
Yep.
So I'll even take a step back, because there's a thing going on in my life right now that it's interesting how all of these points in your life, as you get a little bit older, start to connect. And you start to realize that all of the answers were probably there the whole time. You just probably weren't paying attention to them in the right way. So New York City native. I grew up in Queens, New York, which is as New York as you can get. My parents divorced at a young age. I was constantly told, the first time I was called disruptive, was in math class by the nuns in the Catholic school, when they said I was disruptive and they were kicking me out of the class. And I would get kicked out of a couple schools back to back because I was going through kind of a troubling childhood. But I can, as I look back now, the one thing that I always stuck with me is I always questioned, like, why? Like, I always questioned things for some reason. Even I can remember being about 5, 6, 7, 8 years old and just wondering why things were the way they were. Mm-hmm. And so I finally made it through high school. I joined the United States Marine Corps, would spend a bunch of years in the Marines, both on the U.S. soil and deployed forward, both in combat type trainings and scenarios, time in the Middle East, time on aircraft carriers, a really amazing time. I served both during peace times and during war times for the U.S. And then I got to a point where, you know, I had wanted to do that forever. That was my mission at that point, was I'm going to be a Marine forever. And I just got to a point where I really just wasn't passionate and loved it anymore. I think I was just burnt out on it, if I was going to be honest.
Yeah.
And so I moved back to New York City, and this was, I don't know, 2003-ish. And at that point, getting a job as a security guard out of the military was super easy to do. Mm-hmm. And so you could pretty much walk into any security place and they give you a job as doing, you know, physical security, yeah, checking IDs at a door, you know, that type of stuff. And so I was lucky enough to get hired by a guy who was a former Marine as well. And they put me in a building. The address is 135 East 57th Street in New York City. And that building is important because it was where they had moved all of the post 9/11 companies to. Mm-hmm. So you have all these buildings that used to be in the World Trade Center, all these mega big financial, yeah, services buildings, all jam-packed into one building. But you basically had a building full of people with PTSD, yeah, right?
So good.
But you had, because of that, you had, you know, significant security, you know, constant white glove type security, mm-hmm, in order to enable these people to kind of get back to doing what they did really, really well. And so I ran security there for about 6 months and then realized that, like, there was just this voice inside of me that's like, you're just capable of so much more.
Yeah.
But at that point, you know, I still had more time carrying a sea bag on my back and polishing boots or cleaning a weapon than I had doing anything else in my life. And so to build off your comments, I went online, I Googled what a resume actually was, because I really didn't even know at that point. Filled out this resume that was full of like all of these military words, you know, non-commissioned officer in charge of 18 squads, you know, whatever it said, right? And I went around during my lunch break and handed it out to all of the HR people, the human resources people in all these buildings, in this building. And I get to this one floor and I hand a resume to a guy. So I went to the HR person first, the human resources person wasn't there. So I was walking out, I see this other guy in a suit and tie. And I go, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you give this to the human resources guy? And he's like, sure. And he takes the paper from me. He looks at it for a second, and I've obviously got my name on it. He goes, Neil, I don't know what we're gonna do with you, but you're hired. You're hired. And what I didn't realize at the time is that this was the chief operating officer of a global hedge fund company called Guggenheim Partners, which today I think has like $50 billion under investment or something like that. At that point, they were, you know, maybe 100 people. So they hired me, put me in the mailroom, and I was in charge of filling the printers to make sure they had all their toner. I had to water the orchids to make sure that they had all the water they needed to be pretty. And I would fill the refrigerator with soda for all the hedge fund traders. So I know a lot about soda, a lot about the mailroom, and a ton about orchids, if anyone needs any help. I'm really, really good with flowers. So I did that for, you know, I don't know, a year, year and a half. And I stumbled upon in one of my conversations, or one of my projects, how much they were paying these financial services analysts, right? Yeah. They're making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And at that point, I didn't have any concept of what money even was, because, yeah, I was used to getting a paycheck in the military. But I can recall at that point, I was making $43,000 a year was, yeah, what I was making.
Yeah, so massive miss in the correlation.
Right, and to me, that was still the most money I'd ever made in my life.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm like, I don't know how to ask for more because I don't know what more even looks like.
Yeah.
And so when I found out what some of my counterparts were making, I marched into it was, I never forget, it was holiday season. They're doing holiday bonuses and stuff like that. I marched into the human resources guy who I worked for, and I said, Elliot, I remember his name even, Elliot, I've been working really, really hard here. I would like a $10,000 a year raise. And he's like, you're right, Neil, you've been working really, really hard. I'll ask the powers that be, and I'll come back to you and answer in a week. I said, great. And I marched right back into the office and went back to work. A week later, he comes up to me and he goes, Neil, good news. We've gotten a raise approved for you for $5,000. And something in my head, I think it was a matter of, I knew how much some of those counterparts were making. I said, thank you. I quit.
Yeah.
And I resigned right then and there. Left the company about 2 weeks later, got recruited into a job as reporting directly to the global CEO of a major commercial real estate firm, making double what I was making prior to that. And then 3 weeks, I worked there for 3 weeks. I remember HR pulling me into the office there and saying, Neil, it turns out we've done a really bad job of doing an industry comparison of what someone in your role should be making. So we're going to give you a raise because we want you to make the equivalent of what someone in your role makes in the rest of the industry. So now here I am making 2.5 times what I was making 6 weeks ago just because I understood my self-worth.
Yeah.
I mean, fundamentally, looking at the time, I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. But looking back now, I'm like, all I've done to be successful, a lot of it, besides the hard work, is understanding my self-worth.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, totally agree with that. I mean, there's such missing points in that in today's society, either on from your story, is A, having the confidence to speak up and talk about what you believe you're worth, and being able to speak to someone and say, this is where I believe I am and believe what my value is, and then align that conversation to happen in the business to talk to you, and then making that judgment call of, am I actually wanted or noticed within the business? And if they don't value me, even though I'm giving more value than what I'm getting back, is it better for me to step away from it? And then being brave enough to step away, like you said, is you'd only known the ceiling you were at. You'd never known anything past that ceiling, but you had an understanding of a final understanding of what my self-worth was, because you saw what other people were doing, how much time you're putting in, and what you're getting back, and saying, hey, sorry, you know, thanks for my 5K, but that's not gonna touch sides. And I'm guessing you at that stage had no idea that there was a second step once you resigned. You just knew that I had enough. This is, you're not valuing my time or what I'm putting in, and we go forward from there.
Right. Right. And I can say that now, you know, now in the state of life I'm in now, where, just to fast forward a little bit, what would happen is that, you know, some people would look at my history and my background and say, well, you historically only have stayed in at companies or worked on projects that took about 2 years, mm-hmm. 2.5 years. You know, in a traditional mindset, you might think that that's, you know, what they call resume hopping.
Yeah.
For me, it's about, I will stay loyal to a project, to a team, for as long as A, I'm demonstrating value, and B, I'm getting something back from you, and C, we all agree on what that value is.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would do is that every couple years, I would then hop to the next project and the bigger company and the bigger role and the bigger thing. And then in 2009, I was working with Morgan Stanley, and I had the big job, I had the office, I had the nice salary, I had everything working the way that I thought it was supposed to work at that time, right?
Yep.
Here I am, I'm out of the military for about 6 or 7 years, and I'm thinking, wow, I've accomplished so much. And then I walked into a meeting with my boss at the time, and the economy was not that great at that point. And they said the company's downsizing, and they gave me a pink slip. And and my ego took this immense shot. And I would end up being unemployed for about 16 months straight. Mm-hmm. I went back to doing security just so I could put money and food on the table for my family. And looking back, it was the most beautiful, best thing that's ever happened to me. It was the rock bottom of rock bottoms.
Yep.
I remember being in cafes in New York City, and I'd be traveling, you know, into Manhattan to go to job interviews, and I'd line up 6 interviews in a day so that I could just do a full day of that.
Yep.
And I remember counting out change and deciding whether or not I was going to buy another coffee for the day or a hot dog on the street, because that was the best I could do until I got home that evening, and then could eat at home. And then I would go, well, if I get the coffee, I can sit in the coffee shop and I get free Wi-Fi. But if I get the hot dog, I get mustard. Like, those are some of the things that I could think about, right?
That's something only a New Yorker would say, right? Look, I've been there quite a few times, and I totally get that. That's only something that a person from there would say. I want
right. Right. And to this, so two things came out of that, though. One, it was a massive reset for me. It was a massive, massive pivot and shift in me. I then said I would never put all of my eggs in one basket.
Yep.
And work for a big corporate company ever again, one that I don't have a control and say in my own livelihood.
Yep.
Two, I had to pull upon many of my fortitude and resilience strategies from the military in order for me to get through that. It was a very, 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 very personal and defining moment for me. And it opened up my world to, you know, what this world of startup and starting your own businesses and stuff like that really was. And so since that point, you know, I've been a part of many, many businesses. I've become very technical in my understanding of how these things, you know, our phones,
yep,
and laptops and everything work. You know, I've done a bunch of things. And then a couple of years ago, you know, I was at a conference talking to cybersecurity leaders, and it's very interesting because this world of cybersecurity, this industry, is this evolving beast that many people just don't understand yet, because it has not as yet to kind of balance itself out, right? It's like the car industry, you know, we got to a certain point where we understood what a car was. They all look the same for the most part. Yeah. And then, you know, 50 or 60 years later, a guy comes out with Tesla, and now we're pivoting into some other direction.
Yeah, correct.
You know, the same thing goes, is most industries are very well defined. This industry of cybersecurity came out of the box, never defined itself, and is evolving even before that even is allowed to happen. And so because I think of my military background, you know, my thirst for growth in general, you know, I've become a, you know, people look to me for advice around data privacy, yeah, around how applications really work, and how they can genuinely protect their personal and their professional businesses in this world that is hard to understand.
Yeah, it is an interesting space. Myself, from the day job in the IT world, I've worked across cybersecurity. I've implemented cybersecurity solutions myself. And just to our listeners, when Neil's talking about cybersecurity, to put it in simple terms without getting really deep in there and getting too technical, we're talking about trying to prevent breaches, trying to prevent loss of data in or out of a business through cyber attacks, whether that could be phishing, bots, a term that should be quite common to people at the moment is ransomware as well, which is quite common at home in the sense of people not realizing that and now been held to ransom, malware as well. And your antivirus products that you get out the box for your personal or your standard corporations are not going to be stopped by, those things aren't going to stop the people trying to get into your corporation or your personal life as well and steal that data. So that's where there's products like AppGuard that Neil's running with at the moment, and also the insights that he provides in those spaces to understand, firstly, A, what is trying to happen in that space to yourself or your corporation, what is the best methods to prevent that happening as well, and then also what is the best implementation of those tools around cybersecurity, and understanding that once someone gets the data, what can actually be done with it. You know, I spoke on a previous podcast talking about someone, we just talked on Messenger bots. Facebook Messenger bots on with Josh, one of the previous people. And we're talking about having to hash information when you transfer people's information from one database to another database and so forth so that it can always stay secure. It's the same with any data that you have in a corporation. Of a simple data breach, especially in the American market, as a John Smith sitting in California, his name, his location, and his telephone number getting breached out of a large corporation, just one person will get that company in big trouble as well.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
And we're lucky in the sense of, or lucky, talking about this side of New Zealand, there's been big data breaches in the past good few years, and some of the data breaches are simple that companies go, oh, we don't have to worry about it, so we're not as locked down from cybersecurity, or simple implementations and something gets out. But as I said, in the American market, that space doesn't play that game. They want their data protected, especially because of the political nature that they're worried about what gets done with someone's personal data as well. And I can imagine, especially over the last few years of what's happening in the government, some big data breaches and some big people coming out, Edward Snowden coming out, especially he was on Joe Rogan, what is it, in the last 10 days, and he spoke about all that data and what they were trying to do. People take that shit seriously.
Sure, absolutely.
So one thing I wanted to touch on as well is, you know, as we said, you went through the Marines, you got into your job, and then you started learning of getting to a place, having self-value, growing every 6 months or 2 years, and saying that people look back at it and a new resume hopping. I don't, you know, that's what the other people say. I've done the exact same thing in the last 10 years in my personal career. If anyone looked back on my LinkedIn profile, 6 months, 12 months to 18 months, 2 years is usually my maximum. And it's, again, it's, as you said, it's not about, hey, I want to get more or I want more money. It's about finding something that's keeping you passionate, finding something that's keeping you motivated, and finding somewhere where there's a relationship between both parties that is beneficial. Because a lot of people get into a situation where they go, great, I've got a day job, or I've got a contract, or I'm implementing the solution, but it's stagnant between themselves and the company they're working for. Now, yes, it pays the bills. Yes, you can stay there, but if you're stagnant and you don't have that fire or that passion to get up and go, hey, I want to learn more and improve myself, your life's just going to stay on that plateau. And we see a lot of people going, hey, why am I not two levels high in a company? Why am I not in an executive level? I've been here, you know, 10 years or 15 years. But it's because they're taking this approach, thinking that naturally someone's just going to pull them. You might have to go through five different companies, but each company, as you said, you've stepped up and you've been able to take better control of your path and better control of what actually happens to you as well.
Yeah, I think we started this podcast, right, to talk a little bit about the impacts of digital and mobile on people, right? But I think we're in this interesting evolution now where, you know, I think humans are we're built to be nomadic in some way, right? Yeah. Like we're just built to be like that. And you know, capitalism, I think as a rule, kind of made that a little stagnant for us, right? So what happened was we settled, you know, where there are resources that we could leverage, and I think digital has now changed that to where, you know, if you think about that whole piece about that baseline that you talk about, where it's like you go to work and you become stagnant, it's like many people would compromise themselves along the way and say, well, I'm going to work for company X, which is a big logo, right? Yep. So there's value to that to me. Then if I do a good job and I work there for 20 years, I'm going to get a retirement and I'm going to be able to retire at a certain age. Well, digital has just shifted that to where now we have the ability to remote work. We have the ability to have podcasts with places with 17-hour time differences, right? And there's different ways now to, you know, continue that path, right? I mean, like, and as we get older, right, the reality is as we get more aware of our bodies and we're able to live a lot longer, people are realizing that they don't want to spend their entire lives, you know, in a cubicle, working 9 to 5, you know, doing the same thing over and over again. And I mean, to be transparent, some of the work I've done in the world of, you know, AI and automation, that used to be a skill set. If you could do something very, very well 100 times, you were an expert.
Yeah.
Now it's like, if you can do something 100 times, perfect, and you're not thinking about how you can automate that process, you're out of a job.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think it's we're in a very, very interesting time where some people could focus on, you know, some of the negative things going on in the world. And the reality is that we're going through this very interesting evolution where the consciousness of the world is changing. What's important to people is changing significantly. And the way that we optimize on that type of stuff is fundamentally, you know, becoming more important than the big company logo.
It is indeed. I mean, people chasing the tick box on the CV to say, I've worked for this corporation or that corporation, not understanding what it actually means once you're in a corporation. People also don't understand it sometimes. Hey, I'm going to go work for the number one company in my area, in my niche or my field, and go and not realize, well, that company hires 50,000 people and worldwide, and you're going to join there and you're going to be number 50,000. Yes, you're going to be working for that company, but there's going to be no value for yourself, no value for your understanding, or unless you're very lucky and very driven in certain areas, your path up that could take X amount of years and or even unachievable. And that's when the sense of you've got to chase the passion, not chase the logo, as you said, you know, or the brand that sits behind it with not understanding your path. And that just gets me into a sort of a quick, not a question of something I wanted to talk about that you've spoken about previously on other shows about brand and brand awareness and understanding the value of one's brand. And why I wanted to bring this up, because I was walking down Auckland City the other day during lunchtime and I caught myself laughing out loud because of the story, and I'll let you have it talk about it. But I was talking about you had a brand strategy session with a large corporation. And you brought up the Yankee story about the brand and what a Yankee is. Did you want to just take the listeners through if you know what story I'm talking about?
I haven't thought about that one in a while. That's a great one.
Yeah.
It's interesting, right? Because I have a really good friend of mine who is a very compelling creative type. And he has taught me so much about brand in general.
Yeah.
And if you look at, you know, and this ties into our conversation, and I think this is why you're asking this question, where it's like we're fundamentally changing what the value of a brand really is. Mm-hmm. Right. But what I think I've learned over the years, really, and I'll tie into the Yankee story in a second, is brand is always going to be about people. It's always going to be tied down to a person, right? It wasn't the Nike swoosh that really made Nike what it was today,
yeah.
Right? It was Michael Jordan. It was Bo Jackson,
yeah.
Right? It was people, right? They just were able to become aligned with a, you know, logo and cool colors and stuff like that. But it's interesting how, you know, with the New York Yankees, right, they've been able to take a word, right, that fundamentally didn't really have any meaning to it at all and turn it into this household name that even if you're living on the West Coast of the U.S. and you don't have any exposure, you either love or hate these guys just because of, you know, the brand that's been able to be built around it.
Yep.
Right? If you look at that, right, it's always the people. Now, if you look at other baseball teams in the U.S., you've got the Cardinals, you've got the Orioles, you've got all these, the Expos in Canada, you've got the Giants,
yeah,
right? But none of them have the brand affinity that the Yankees have and how they've been able to tie it into, you know, and just to name a couple of the players because I know them, the Mickey Mantles of the world, the Babe Ruths of the world, right? But it's all tied. Every brand is always going to be tied into a person, right? And I've done some exercises in the past where if you look at the brands that are out there, the Ubers of the world, the Lyfts of the world, the Airbnbs of the world, they're almost built to stay away from representing a person because they don't, because they haven't figured out who that person is yet.
To represent the brand.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Like the outside of Uber's CEO, the first one, Travis.
Yep.
And having met him a few times, I can't think of anybody that I don't, Uber doesn't make me think of a person.
Yeah.
Lyft doesn't make me think of a person. Airbnb doesn't make me think of a person. Expedia, I think of William Shatner and his commercials, right? Like,
totally.
It's always the person.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. It is. I mean, we spoke about it earlier, Elon Musk, Tesla, you know, there's, that must be today one of the strongest correlations of image to brand, person to brand, right? Would have to be the Tesla story there. I think it's just because of his unique flavor and his unique style. But going back to the Yankee story, what caught my ear and made me burst out laughing is you were talking about this at a strategy meeting that you discussed on previous content before, and you asked the people what a Yankee is, and you know, and you got through to them to understanding this whole terminology of it's not even a word or what does it mean, what does it stand behind it. And as you're telling the story, I'm walking down at lunchtime with a jacket on, and right in front of the jacket says Yankees. So I was just hacked out laughing, walking down with my headphones on. People always thought I'm a bit crazy. And it was such a weird moment that you spoke about that brand. And I'm, like I said, on the other side of the world with my Yankee jacket that I bought at Yankee Stadium about 2 years ago when I was last there watching them play a game. And to me, I was like, I've got to mention this. It was such a unique moment to me, listen to the content talking about a brand, and I was wearing the brand at that moment and proving the point of, you know, doesn't matter where you are in the world, if there's a value behind the brand, it'll always find its way.
Yeah. And it's I mean, if you look at it, I've known some lawyers that specialize in branding, and there's, you know, intrinsic value to, like, New York City is its own brand.
Yeah. Correct.
Right? You know, Queens, Bronx, the Brooklyn, I'm sure New Zealand, you know, has its own brand.
Yep.
Right? There's a brand value to all of these type of things. And it all kind of just ultimately now, at least nowadays, ties into the person. Mm-hmm. I think that's another shift of where we're becoming more, human centric into some of these things. Because if you look back in the, you know, 70s and 80s, you know, where you had the Fords, the Chevys, the Coke,
yep,
the Pepsi, right? All of these words that meant kind of sort of something, but it used to be this big, bold, you know, masculine brand kind of focus of the logo. And now, yep, we've gotten to a point where we want to understand what the mission is behind this company. We want to understand who the people are behind this brand, and can we actually align with it? Can we align with the attitudes, the behaviors, and the beliefs of this brand in a meaningful way? And if I can, well, then I want to support it. And if I can't, then I don't want to.
That's great insight, Neil, into that. And it brings me into, I mentioned to Neil at the beginning of the show, I had a lot of fans that were really excited to have Neil on the show. And one of them actually sent me a question during the week to say, hey, if you could drop this into the podcast, I'd absolutely love it. And thank you, Dalton, for sending through the question. And I think what we've just got onto now is you've almost half answered the question before I've even asked it. And what he had sent through was saying, how would you recommend a new startup company that's gone through their first year about scaling their business larger? And I think a lot of what you said at the moment would answer that query in a certain way of understanding your brand, understanding the value of your brand and the mission of your brand, and ensuring that is clear to potential customers as part of that next scalable part into year two and year three.
Right. Well, I think about it, the way that I think about it, having done it a couple times here, is, you know, I think you got to be really honest with yourself first on, like, what the core is of what you're trying to achieve as a business. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think like 70% of the world's startups, you know, fail in the first year.
Yeah.
Right. And I've been part of one in the past where, you know, we were able to do amazing things for like the first 6 months and then just ran out of steam.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's the advice I would give people is, you know, you got to stay true and core to whatever the thing is that you're trying to do originally, right? Yeah. So and what I mean by that is, if you're building a software, for example, and then you're running out of money and you decide you're going to offer services in order for you to pay your bills, like that might be a smart tactic to use, but it's not, it's going to be distracting from accomplishing what you're really trying to do,
yeah.
Right? And I think there's a lot of processes that go on there where founders will end up compromising themselves, you know, from an ego perspective because they have to, and I say this because I've done this before, it's like I compromised the business myself once because I was so tight that I was going to fail that I just wouldn't let myself fail until there was no option but to fail because yeah. I'd exhausted every option that was good. Like I had multiple options to go to. And so I think that it's like a couple examples I would give to answer the question more directly is, you know, hire slow, fire fast, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, be very, very pointed when you're hiring people. And if they're not working out, then you have to move them on to out of your way because it'll become very time consuming for you to do that. And as in an early stage company, you don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Find people who are very good at very specific things so that you can measure, you know, their success. And then I always feel like every startup I've ever met always has at least one, maybe more of these people, but find that one person or a couple people who's the jack of all trades, who will learn anything, will do anything, and will be flexible enough to not really, you know, throw the hand up and say, I can't. Mm-hmm. Because those people end up becoming the glue in your organization, right?
Yeah.
All the other stuff around brand, logo, automation, how do we scale sales, those things, if you have the kind of pieces I'm mentioning all kind of
yep.
in place to stay true to them, the rest of that will manifest itself as you come along the way.
Yep. So a great answer to the question there, Neil. I love that. And showing understanding the simple things and the right things at the right moments of your path will take you down there. And then also paying attention to when there's situations like you spoke about, you didn't want to let go when you had to let go. And knowing that and having the right insights to go, okay, I've got to make a call now what I'm doing with the business and so forth. And I think you'll find this quite funny because you start off going at, was it 5% or 10% of first-year companies in their first year don't make it through. We actually spoke about this in my previous episode with guy Nathan Freighter, and he had the same information. So what he told himself was if 5 or 10% don't get it through, I'm going to hedge my bets. And he started 10 companies. And he was like, well, one of them's going to get through to year two or year three. And then realized that 2 years later and trying to run at that stage, still 6 or 8 companies that were still going, became a little bit problematic. So yeah, you can't get around the whole hedging of I'm going to launch more companies. So my chances of being more successful in at least one of them is not going to go the way, because unfortunately you can't cut yourself up 10 times to focus on 10 different missions,
right?
Different brands.
Right. Right. Well, I appreciate the logic. I don't think it's scalable.
Yeah. And a big thing, you'll know about Neil, a big thing that he drives in businesses when he goes in and he consults or talks about mentorship and so forth is, if it's not scalable, it's not interesting enough, or if it's not scalable, it's not the right direction to go to. And that's a big thing that I know I've seen what you do, Neil, and what you discuss as well, that ensuring the solution that you have and the path that you could take it within a business or in a brand is how you can make that scalable up for X amount of levels.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting thing. Like if you look at, if you get a chance, you go look at one of my LinkedIn posts from last week, It's got 73,000 views.
Damn.
Right? And it's funny because I was speaking with my marketing team and explaining to them how I did it, right? Because one of the things that one of my focuses is really how do you facilitate growth and scalability, both at a human level and in your business.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed them the 7 or 8 posts that were strategically placed, knowing that that 9th post was going to be the one that was going to be the one that was going to pop.
Yeah.
And it's just because I understand how the algorithm works.
Yeah.
For LinkedIn. And so it's interesting because there is a huge value. And I know you misspoke before, but you said you referenced the Gary V.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one of the most formidable lessons I've ever learned from the time that I've spent with Gary V. Mm-hmm. Is you know, when you start to talk about macro and micro content.
Yeah.
And you know, it's almost like you were able in preparation for this podcast to surf around the internet, do a little bit of homework, and you I'm confident you feel like we know each other a little bit now, right? And
pretty much.
And we follow each other on social media, and I feel like I know you a little bit as well. And now we have a foundation that we can build off of that has so much more purpose than the time or effort that you would put into being like, well, let me build a logo.
Yeah.
Let me stress out over whether it should be yellow, black, purple, pink, or green. Let me get frustrated because my friends don't like my logo. Mm-hmm. You know, it just kind of spins instead of being like, no, put in the work, see what process gets you from what I call first touch, the first check. See if it's actually scalable.
Yeah.
And then scale it, right? The one other thing that just comes to mind before I digress too far is, you know, a lot of people will say when you start a business or start a startup, you should go to your friends and go to your family. And if they'll buy from you, that's a good way for you to start.
Mm.
It is if you have some kind of, like if you're selling coffee,
yeah.
Then sure, do that, right? Because everybody knows how to sell coffee.
Yeah.
But what I've also learned, and I know you have too, because of the face you made just there, is that you get this like false sense of success when your friends and family are, you know, checking out for you.
Yeah, they're supporting you.
Right, right. Whereas I remember in one of the businesses that I started a few years ago, the first time I had a customer come into the website organically and purchase something from the website, it was the best feeling ever.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, who is this person? They are amazing.
Totally. I can relate to that. I've had some e-commerce sites myself launching, and yeah, and businesses, as we all do. And you get the people to support you. I mean, even the podcast brand, it's like, oh yeah, I listen, and friends and family. But it's when you meet or you see someone that's not in your circle at all and come to you and go, I know about your business, or I know about your brand, or I've bought a product, or I'm supporting it. And you go, shit, I had no idea this person existed. And, you know, they've seen what I'm offering, my brand or my business or whatever product I'm doing out there, which is great. But one thing I want to take a little bit back is if people weren't really paying attention to what Neil said in the last 10 minutes, he did say that he knows the LinkedIn algorithm. I think there's like 1 of 10 people in social media that understands that. And he also did know, just as a little reminder of the golden nugget, he said his post got 70,000 views, I think it was, which is bloody an awesome, amazing achievement. He also said he primed that with 8 posts before that. So to anyone listening that wants a little hack, go see what he did on those 8 posts and see what he did on his 9th post. If Neil, you know, and you can see that what he went through to get to his 70,000 views on the post, and see if you can figure out the algorithm. Because I talk to a lot of people offline most days, and they're asking me, you know, I even struggle myself on the Instagram game, and the algorithms change every 3 or 6 months. What has it to produce good content? How do you get reach and so forth? And we spoke about it.
Well, when this podcast goes live, I'll do my best to see what we can do with it to get lots of views.
Oh, look here. By all means, if I got 70,000 views on one of my posts, irrespective of podcast or not, I think I'll be running back down the streets in the city just with my Yankees jacket on. I think you'd see me on, I think you'd see me on the news, even in America, that some hooligan wearing a Yankees jersey jacket got arrested. But yeah, so that's an amazing achievement. It looks like crazy. I think we've already been going almost 45 minutes, Neil. I like to keep my shows at this sort of length. It allows my listeners to take the bite-sized pieces. I know you've got so much more content to offer today, but I'd love to have it in about 6 or 12 months time or even further to have you back on the show. But before we transition to the end of the show, what would you love to leave our listeners with today? What sort of one bite piece of content would you love to leave them with, either respective around being aware of cybersecurity or preventing themselves in that area, or just about marketing, sales and marketing or their business?
Yeah. So, I mean, first and foremost, I'm super passionate about, people, process, and so if there's anyone listening to the podcast, I'm pretty easy to find on social media. If they'd like to reach out and have conversations about those things, I'm more than happy to do so. The other piece is, if anybody would like to be educated or like some awareness around cybersecurity, please do reach out, and we'll definitely help those out in any way that we can, whether it's a small business, a big business, or even for home and personal use. So I definitely appreciate the time and thank you for this.
I know. Awesome, Neil. So as you said, for those insights, for those areas, everyone can reach out to Neil. Neil, where's the best way for people to reach out to at the moment? Would that be your LinkedIn and Instagram platform?
Yeah. So I'm on most social media channels. It's I am Neil Conlin, at I am Neil Conlin, NEALCONLON. I'm on all those channels. It's probably the best way.
Yep.
Spend probably more than 12 hours a day on them. So there will be no dark mode for me in November, but I'll be there.
Just to ask Rich, when you're talking about I am Neil Conlin and is the handle, did you ever get the business cards made that just said at Neil Conlin?
That's the next evolution. The next evolution is, I'll give you a quick closing tidbit on my social media every now and again. And this is a growth hack that I think people should use. I will post, have you Googled me lately? Right?
Yep, to raise the name.
And what that does is just raises up the amount of people that have searched for Neil Conlin, which then indexes my name on Google search engines, which then it's almost like some people have said to me, why don't you have a Neil Conlin website? Why don't you have a dedicated website for your speaking and for, all your evangelizing? And I'm like, I don't have to. All I need to do is just keep making sure that people can Google me. And I come up, if you go ahead and do it, right? Everyone who's listening, go ahead and Google me, and you'll see a good example.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's been a bit cheeky there, getting all the listeners to, go in and do it. But I totally understand that, getting your brand or your business indexed in Google is really important. And by all means, yeah, totally, the listeners, you don't need a .com to direct your listeners towards if you've got a brand or business, because once you indexed that brand or business, whether it's a LinkedIn page, an Instagram page, whether it's AppGuard, that'll pop up. Those 3 or 4 or 5 items will pop up, and the person that is searching in your name for a specific reason will see it. Otherwise, you've got to go to, as you said, a neilconlin.com. You've got to go into that .com and go, okay, I want to see Neil today because of speaking. Now, I want to speak to Neil today about cybersecurity. When on the front page, if you kept the way it is, you could go to directly into the key area that you wanted to go into.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But again, Neil, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a great having discussion. Like I said, it was an amazing, interesting insight to myself to do the research. As I said to a few friends, I said, I've got an ex-Marine coming on the show, so this hard-focused Marine that's done his time, and then I look out and he's an absolute geek. as well, right? So it's a total left, right-hand side challenge of, he's a data analytic cybersecurity geek, and he loves that stuff, but he's also been through the time and given his and served and so forth. So it's a total different mindset of that. But again, Neil, thank you for your time coming on and letting my listeners hear your story, listen about this, the challenges you went through, how you stepped through it, how you kept the focus, having self-worth, understanding your self-worth, and getting to where you are today to do what keeps you passionate and keeps you engaged.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate the time and look forward to connecting with you again soon.
And to everyone else, thank you again for coming on the Wolf of Queen Street podcast. If you listen on the audio podcast or on the YouTube series, you know we can find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. And if you like the show, please feel free to share, comment, and subscribe. And to everyone else, have a powerful day.